Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Eat Local New York podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Tringale, and in this week's episode, I am talking with David from the Peachtree Sandwich Company. You know, I'm really happy to have had David on the podcast, and I'm doing my best not to say excited because I say excited for every single episode that we put out, but I'm really happy to have been able to sit down and talk with David. I've been to the Peachtree Sandwich Company a couple times, love their chicken sandwich, love that chicken sandwich. It's in my opinion, the best right now in town. And, well, I just love seeing new restaurants that open up and being able to follow them and see what they're doing, see how they run their social, see how their business does, see how the reviews, and then just see as they how they evolve. And when I worked at Gerhard's Restaurant Equipment Supply Company, I was fortunate enough to have met David there and produce a podcast for Gerhard's that David was on. So I've been able to kind of see a little bit more closely the evolution of his restaurant. And I just think it's really great to have someone local open up a small restaurant here in town and have them run it. It looks like, it feels like a local spot, but I can just tell, and you'll be able to tell, I think, from listening to David talk, you can tell that he runs it like a big business. And I mean that as in the most sincerest compliment ever, because I just love watching their restaurant do its thing. And so I hope that after listening to this podcast, which I had a great time talking with him on, but I hope that you go out to DeWitt and check them out. And they're a great, 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 great little spot to go get some lunch from. Well, you know, today's March 6th, and it's Green Beer Sunday. Gorgeous out. It's like 55, 60 degrees outside. The sun is shining. It feels like things are beginning to change in the area. And I, you know, over the past week, 2 weeks, I've heard of a lot of new restaurant projects that are getting ready to come to light here in Central New York over the course of the next few months, 5-6 months. And it's really exciting. You know, I think while I was spending the last 2 months complaining about how dead our area was for food and for ideas, that others were just building things. Because that's, from all the new projects that I've heard of, it really seems like that. You know, one of them is a friend of mine, Kyle, over at the Mastro Restaurant Group. You know, they own Kasai and they own Danny's Steaks, and he's opening the Tap House on Walton and the Tap House Bread Company. And now he's getting ready to launch Desir Algo, which is a ghost kitchen taco joint. I was fortunate enough to do the photography for their pictures, for their menu a couple weeks ago, and got to eat the tacos. The benefit of being a food photographer is that you get to eat the food that you photograph. And I can legitimately say, with no bias whatsoever, that these are the best tacos I've had in Syracuse, without question. I mean, these things are just beyond legit. And so I'm really excited for them to open. And yeah, there's just a bunch of cool projects going on that I'm not going to mention because I don't think that they're supposed to be public just yet. But there's a lot of cool stuff coming to Syracuse. And I can't wait for it all to come out and for everybody to see really how our city is going to respond to these new concepts. So it's going to be really fun. I do want to take a moment and just announce that we are going to be hosting a bar crawl in Syracuse on April 16th. It's a Saturday, April 16th. It's from 2 to 8 p.m. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a sangria bar crawl, and we're going to be hitting up six different restaurants and bars in the area, all making their own sangria. And it's going to all end with a party over at the Rail Line, where we're going to have live music, dinner catered by Limp Lizard Barbecue. We're going to be giving away a bunch of prizes. It's just going to be a great time. I can't wait for this one. You can head to eatlocalnewyork.com and buy your tickets. They're $35. That gets you entrance into the bar crawl. It gets you really, really, really discounted drink prices, sangria prices at all of the bars that are participating, where they're only going to be like $2, $3, $4 a piece. And then it gets you access to the party at the end at the Rail Line, where we're going to have complimentary dinner provided by Limp Lizard Barbecue. There's going to be a cash bar. There's going to be live music. And then we're going to start giving away a bunch of different stuff. I mean, $100 restaurant gift card packs and merchandise. And and each ticket comes with a free Eat Local New York card. So $35, you get a free Eat Local New York card. You get dinner from Limp Lizard Barbecue, access to the party with live music, cash bar, and $2, $3, $4 sangrias at different bars around town. So it's going to be a great time. Head over to eatlocalnewyork.com today. Buy your ticket. $35 on the website, $35 in person at Limp Lizard on Onondaga Boulevard, or $40 the day of the event. So head over there, get your ticket. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, without further ado, let's get into this week's episode, my conversation with David from the Peachtree Sandwich Company. So how's everything going? You own Peachtree Sandwich Company?
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. Right in the heart of DeWitt, as we call it. things are going well. I don't know.
How long has it been? 6 months?
It's been about 10 months now.
Wow.
So we're coming up on a year in March. And I don't know. Things are going well. I think the grand plan, I have a feeling any restaurant owner you bring on here, mm-hmm. will tell you that they had a plan that they started out with, and then it just completely turns upside down, and then all you're doing every single day is trying to adjust and modify. Mm-hmm. So the plan is kind of going okay.
Yeah.
The biggest plan was to make sure that people enjoyed the food, mm-hmm. that we gave really good hospitality and service, and the plan was to kind of just have like a slow burn of promotion. People slowly kind of find out who we are and kind of give ourselves some time to figure out our own way.
Yeah.
And so I think we've done that to a certain extent. People seem to like the food. Mm-hmm. I feel like our hospitality that we offer, I think that's pretty spot on. That I'm very happy where that's ended up. And slowly like doing stuff like this, but also, you know, just kind of word of mouth and things. We see that our reach is kind of getting a little wider and wider every month.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I think things are going well.
Yeah.
I would love to, you know, have sales go up, costs go down. I mean, those are ideal situations, but you know, that's things you got to learn as you go.
Yeah. It's wild. I don't know if you know Bud Lore at all. Have you ever heard of Bud?
So no.
Bud owns a business called Restaurant QB.
Okay.
And essentially, it's like, you know, somebody says, I know a guy. Well, Bud is the guy for the restaurant industry.
Okay. He's local?
Yeah. He's really based in Syracuse or based in Central New York. So do you ever hear of Dining Alliance back in the day?
I've heard of it, yeah.
So Bud essentially built Dining Alliance all over the Northeast for like 20 years or something. And he was one of the first people that ever started to work there, built it up like crazy. And
it's like a consulting type thing, right, that kind of helps you?
Yeah, kind of. It's like it's basically a rebate program for your wholesale. So,
okay.
You know, they work with these, like for example, they work with Johnston Paper and Gerhard's paper. So, if you're buying from Johnston, you can't get a big enough order, or they don't have the product, or whatever the case is, he takes you over to Gerhard's, and then he'll negotiate some sort of a deal, you know, with Gerhard's. So it's like, hey, if you buy through Bud, you'll save a couple percent, whatever the case is. It's not Dining Alliance. I think back in the day, Dining Alliance was more at the end of the year, you got a rebate. The restaurant owner got a rebate check back at the end of the year for 5% or 3% or whatever you bought. It's not like that anymore. It's just he's worked out contracts or deals with all these different suppliers. Bud and I have been talking. We just had him on the podcast. We were talking a lot about pricing and wholesale pricing. And the week before that, I had a JFS rep, Chris, on whose we were talking about chicken pricing of all, you know, and how much that's been going up and down like crazy lately. And that seems like a nightmare for a restaurant owner.
It's tough. I feel for the distributors too, because their hands sometimes are tied as well with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel for them a little bit. I mean, in the end, they're fleecing us to a certain extent. But the it's hard. I think that the biggest part about, you know, for me, it's cost. For the distributor, it's price. Mm-hmm. And for me, the cost of things fluctuating, you always assume they're going to fluctuate to a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. As an owner, I'm like, okay, I want my food costs. Let's say, for example, I own a steakhouse, and I want my food cost to be 35%. It can't go over 35%. That's how I break even. That's what I need. Mm-hmm. And then, so like, you know, the steak I have, like, I have a nice Wagyu steak, and it costs me a certain amount. Now the price has gone up a third, mm-hmm. and it's like, what do you do as an owner?
Right.
Right. Like, there's certain things you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a few things, but it's like, okay, I could raise my price. Right. And maybe some, and then I sell less of them. I could lower my portion. So maybe I make a little bit more off of it than I was, or I could look to save in other areas and not do my price. But I think, like, these things, what they're forcing us as owners to do is to, it's interesting. I think one thing that's forcing us to do is a lot of restaurants are now transparent mm-hmm. about what they're doing, like on Instagram.
Yeah.
It's like, hi, the price of my brisket sandwich has gone up a dollar because, as you know, prices are going up. And people are like, so I just tell people, like, I don't know what to tell you. It's going to cost a certain thing.
Have you made that post?
No.
Okay.
I've thought about it. I've seen other people do it. And I'm kind of still wondering whether or not it's something that's, like, you know, whether it's beneficial. I think it is, though, to a certain extent, because when I read that as a restaurant owner, mm-hmm. my heart goes out to that guy. And I'm like, man, okay, so you really want this sandwich or this dish to do well.
Yeah.
You're going to raise the price, and hopefully it doesn't affect the volume and the frequency. But the problem is that I have a feeling a lot of people, and in Syracuse, some people can be really price sensitive. And if you're really price sensitive mm-hmm. and you come in and you go, why is that a dollar more than it was before, or $5 more, whatever it is, you might be like, I'm not buying that. And mm-hmm. you might lose that person's business. And I think when you're transparent about it, that helps. But the other thing that it forces you to do is you have to make a decision on indirectly from the cost of, so that Wagyu steak going up, it's going to maybe now one of your full-timers has to become a part-timer.
Yeah.
Which is so hard because no one does that. Like, no full-timer's like, I'll just work half the time. Like, no, it's like, then you're going to lose that person, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you lose a full-timer because of it, or indirectly you have to take a look and it's like, oh man, we've been, you know, I need to get a new air conditioner because it was so hot in the restaurant last year. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, not this year because I got to pay more for this thing.
Right.
It's tough. So, I mean, you see, like, you don't, like, as a consumer, I don't really see it as much.
Yeah.
Other than just like, what the hell? Why the hell are they raising the price on this? You know, it was so, or like, did you notice that it's small now? Like, you know, it used to be great and big. And it's like, well, times are tough now. I mean, not only is the cost of the Wagyu steak going up, but now it's like, you got to pay people more to stay because it's hard to find really good workers. I mean, and I'm not going to like sit there. What I don't like is when restaurants are like, labor shortage, you know, that's what's you know, it's like, no, I feel like certain extent that it's true, but other extents, like you gotta treat people well, or they just, it's very simple. It's
right.
Like, people want to be paid more. They want to be treated better.
Yeah.
And so you do that, and hopefully you get less turnover, and then you don't have the cost of turnover, and then you can focus your stuff on other thing than hiring and recruiting. Because hiring and recruiting, you know, you lose two people. That is 80% of my day is figuring out hiring and recruiting. And we're talking about maybe, you know, looking at another distributor to get my Wagyu steak. I mean, I don't have Wagyu steak in my restaurant for the listeners, but, you know, maybe I should. But, you know, I take half of my day to try and talk to other distributors and see, like, when do they deliver, you know, what's the case size, what's the this and that, oh, you need a credit app, like all this stuff, and then, oh, I need to go on Indeed and start calling these people and interviewing these people and trying to find, make sure they come. Anyway, it's all crazy. It's not all doom and gloom, by the way. Restaurants are fun. It's a crazy enterprise, but they're fun, and guess what? You know, it's like, if you can succeed at operating a restaurant, and if you can make a penny, you know, just one penny, that to me, I'm like, God bless you. That's awesome. You did a great job, because it's crazy. You
know? It is. I, more and more I've been hanging out with, down at Kasai, and
yeah,
like Kasai and Danny's, and it's cool, 'cause it's,
you know, two separate buildings, two separate restaurants owned by the same person, but they're connected with like a little corridor for the bathroom, and then they're connected from the basement underneath. And it's really wild. There's a few times I've hung out there at night during service taking pictures, and to see the dynamic of just all of those people working together, especially with two restaurants, it's like it's an event. I liken it to working, like times that I've worked, like events for Eat Local or whatever the case was, but working like a festival, you know, it feels like that all the time, like every single day. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic, but it also, I think, talking to a lot of restaurant owners, especially lately, they are burnt out, to say the very least. You know, it's amazing to see some of them. So, like, when you were talking about transparency and pricing, I think that's interesting. You know, you ever see the documentary Super Size Me?
Yeah.
You see the second one he did?
No, but I love him. I forgot his name, but he's awesome.
Yeah, is it Weiland? I forget his name. But he did a follow-up to it where he opened up a fried chicken restaurant and like a fast food restaurant.
He opened it up?
Yes.
Wow.
And I think it was in Columbus or Dayton, Ohio. And the entire whole film started with him saying, this is what we're doing. And then it was following him throughout the whole process. Now, they hired like a PR marketing company out of like Madison Avenue, you know, paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to pick the colors and the logo and all that stuff. And he went as far as going to a chicken farm or to a farmer and hiring a farmer to raise. He bought like 1,000 baby chicks and hired this farmer to raise those baby chicks for him. To then
was this all like a ruse or
yeah? Okay. Well, okay. He opened the restaurant up. I mean, they opened it up. People, they hired cooks, staff. You know, whole thing.
Okay.
They had this restaurant open for one day, and the ruse was on the table tents and on like the writing, like the marketing on the wall. They had like this big message written, and he would say, like the table tent would say. You probably really loved our logo. I don't know if you noticed it was green, and then it showed, you know, this. That was actually all a marketing ploy because, you know, the statistics show that you're going to connect with the color green more than any other color.
So he's like proving or disproving consumer behavior theory.
Yes.
Gotcha.
But they did a lot of market research to use the words like fresh and
farm,
free range.
Yeah.
And so
smart.
In the film, they were showing, in order to use the word free range from FDA standards, the chicken, when it was being raised, only had to have access to like this much open
air.
That's
free range. Right.
That meant free range.
Like two feet means free range, not like they're actually free.
Yes.
Yeah.
They took the grilled chicken and painted with charcoal.
Grill lines.
Grill lines, you know, so that way. And so, but all the marketing around the restaurant said all of those things. It told the truth of all those things. So it was pretty interesting.
That's cool.
And
I'll check it out.
That's cool. It was a great little movie and exposed, obviously, a lot in that side of the restaurant world.
Well, you see that stuff, though, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough because some people are able to be successful that way, and God bless them. I mean, the idea behind a business is to make money, right?
Right.
I mean, I think there's a right way to run a business and a wrong way, and that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Other people would be like, there's no wrong way. If you're making money, it's successful business, right? I mean, those are kind of changing at right now. Because, and also, I mean, just the internet itself, and I sound like an old guy. I'm like, the internet? but honestly, the fact that someone can go to my restaurant, figure something out, put it on, and then people can comment on that. All of a sudden now, it makes me accountable. And I think the accountability in a restaurant owner, as a consumer, I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
As an owner, it scares me a little bit. But I feel like if you have the right culture at your restaurant and your staff, everyone knows what they're there for. I think then the accountability is a good thing for me and my staff.
Yeah.
Because I think that I don't lie in anything that we do.
Right.
You know, people come in, they're like, oh, you know, your brisket. And they're like, yeah, we smoke it for like 13 hours. Like it's smoked brisket. Like, you know, we don't mess around. And they're like, oh, you ground your meat? Like, you know, we grind all of our meat. Like, all of our meat for our burgers is ground. We do about 3 times a week. And I'll tell them, I'll be like, this meat was ground yesterday, just so you know. It's fresh. It comes from a full brisket and a full chuck. Like, this is what it is. But we say these things. I know for a fact other restaurants will say certain things like that, and it's not true. I just know it. You know, I mean, and it's fine. That's, you know, whatever. Some people, like my parents, who are just trustworthy old people, they'll be like, you know, they'll be like, well, they said that it was blah, blah. And I'm like, Mom, no. You know, I mean, you start talking about the painted grill lines. Like, you see it sometimes on, like, a chicken that you get somewhere where you're like, those aren't real. Like, this isn't not real. So hopefully, the way that everyone is connected these days is like, it holds restaurants accountable. Because accountability helps the people who I feel like are actually doing it right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know though, if we are at a point yet where, you know, being accountable is going to translate into actual sales and money.
Hey, if you didn't hear in the intro, make sure that you join us for the Sangria Crawl happening April 16th, starting at 2 p.m. It is the first ever Sangria Crawl through downtown Syracuse, and we couldn't be more excited for it. We're even super excited about this party we're throwing at the Rail Line at the end with dinner from Limp Lizard Barbecue, live music, and a cash bar. Head to eatlocalnewyork.com. Get your tickets today for $35. And now, back to the episode.
Yeah. Like, you know, because some people might be like, hey, Peachtree, that's awesome. They, you know, I heard that they make their own focaccia bread. That's cool. I don't know if that means they're like, I'm going to go all the way into DeWitt, find a parking spot and get out of the car or, you know, go and order on, you know, online or whatever it is and have, like, I don't know if that translates yet, but I think it's going in the right direction. I feel like corporate America is being held accountable for a lot of things. How many CEOs and how many people in positions of power now are becoming, you know, we're finding things out about them. They're kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not like for like cancel culture or anything like that, but what I'm saying is that people who aren't doing it right are being kind of called out for it. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But,
I agree with that. I think
it's hard.
I mean, in terms of where Syracuse Eats on Facebook, arguably
you can get toxic though,
right? Yeah. I would say like maybe one of the worst things, like, I mean, as somebody who makes a living on social media, I think that social media is like the worst thing that's happened to.
So how do we bridge that then?
We don't.
How do we take the toxic trolls, you know, those trolls, who all they want to do is negative and stuff like that, and how do we take the people who honestly want to report something that could be good or bad, or a lot of times, I mean, and let's be honest here, most of the time, unless you're at like the best restaurant, it's like, It's hopefully a lot of good.
Yeah.
And usually there's something that you could be like, meh, could have been better. I mean, you go to like St. Urban, my favorite restaurant in CNY, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, have you been to
I love it there.
I mean, it's great. Every month I'm like, Holly, my wife Holly, I'm like, can we go? And she's like, we just went. We need to make sure we build up our funds again. But it's so good. It's so worth it, in my opinion. Yeah. But I go there. Even there sometimes, like there might be one little dish where I'm like, it was great. It wasn't like spectacular. Everything else is spectacular.
Right.
I'm not going to go online. I'm not going to be like, well, everything was great except the scallop was a little overcooked.
For sure.
Of course, I'm not going to do that. But how do we get it to the point where we're holding people accountable? But like, and listen, the trolls have their, you know, like they're there for a reason. It's kind of like the yin and the yang. Like you got to have maybe both sides, but how do you bridge that?
You can't. It's hard. Well,
because I mean, you do this for a living. Like, what do you do? Like,
so there's a lot of things I want to say about that. All right,
you can't block them because then it's like censoring them, right?
So I work for, you know, we do marketing for a lot of restaurants, and there are some who really, and you know, a lot that we've had in the past, who like I had a former client who failed their health inspection by such a large margin that they were ordered to shut down operation immediately. They were open that night still serving dinner. And the next day, and the next day, and the next day. No one ever did anything about it. So there are things like that that still happen, and that was not long ago.
Because if they're shutting you down, I'm just telling you.
Right.
That's bad shape. That's bad news.
Yes, it's very bad. I'm in the
places.
There's
some bad stuff.
Yes.
Like, I can't imagine. I've never seen that. Like, it was. They were like ordered to be like, this is so bad. Like, did they have zero refrigeration? Like, what? Like,
it wasn't.
Actually, you don't have to say.
Yeah,
that,
right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the grease buildup on like the side of the fryer was like 2 inches. Yeah. I mean, it just continued. There was a place downtown, I won't mention the name, they're out of business, but I won't mention the name, but I've been in there with a new owner who's completely renovating the place, and the amount of black mold that was, it was just eating the drywall. I mean, their electrical box, there was so much dust and debris buildup, you could literally measure the thickness of it with a ruler.
Wow.
On the inside of the electrical box. The mold on the tap line. I mean, it was just, the whole thing was disgusting. I have to say, like, I really like your restaurant because everything's open, so you can see that it's all clean.
Sure.
And
thank you.
Yeah, it is. It's spotless.
But that's part of accountability and transparency. I feel like it's just like, it's all here. You can see it. Like, you come in at some point in the day.
Right.
You're watching me grind meat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's I'm literally doing it in eye shot. Is that the word?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I think earshot's a word.
Earshot's right.
Eye view? Yeah,
eye view.
No.
Yeah, whatever.
No, we're making stuff up. But you can see it is my point, right?
But yeah, I've been in there, during like 12:30, right, on a weekday, and it's still clean. It doesn't, nothing.
Well, it's also small, so that helps too.
Yeah.
I can understand. You know, I mean, I've worked in some big places, and you're like, you know, then you're kind of like babysitting. You're like, hey, you got to go clean this up, bro.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to tell the staff. They're like, cause they don't see it, or, they don't care.
Yeah.
Which happens. Crazy.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, when we're talking about transparency, I mean, people can find that. They can go online and see the article in the newspaper or on Syracuse.com and find out which restaurants or whatever. But that place, I mean, the county, all right, health department said, hey, you can't open up, but they were still open up.
So, yeah, I know. So you get like, fine? Like, I
there's
don't
a
know.
Fine. There's a bunch of things, you know, you have to, like, correct, and then the health inspector comes back, and they do another check. But it's not like they're...
But when you're getting shut down and then you stay open...
Right, but it's
that's
not,
like a, that's like a, I don't care, screw you.
I mean, they're not putting, like, red tape up. They're not...
Right, no, you know, I know. Like, the health inspector goes home to his family. Right. It's not like he's, like... You know, goes in there with like a shotgun and is like, shut her down.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. No, like none of that.
Although that would be cool.
Yeah.
That's a good movie right there.
Yeah.
There
you go. Like the rogue health, Onondaga County health inspector.
They're all actually really nice people,
though. Yeah. Taking the law into their own hands. so there's that side of it. Again, that was within the last 6 months, let's say. And there's no accountability there. But then there are some... Like, especially during the pandemic, one thing that we saw more that I noticed more during the pandemic was restaurants who were, like you were saying, being really honest on social media saying, hey, this is where we're at. Three Lives, we were talking about before we got started. When they got into their second orange zone, yellow zone shutdown, they couldn't do anything. And they didn't do delivery or takeout or anything like that. So they were just completely shut down. I think they were doing catering, but anyways.
Yeah.
So John, the owner, decided to start doing, because they started live streaming. I think it was like every Friday, Saturday night for 4 or 5 hours. They would do live streams. It would be because they're video game oriented. You know, some of them would be playing video games, like live streaming that. Then they would cut to the cook doing like a cooking demonstration in the kitchen. But they had paywalls set up where you could make a donation. And if you donated $20, you could get this, like a piece of art off the wall. If you donated, you know, $5,000, you got one of the arcade games. And one night they did, if they reached, I think, $500 or $400, the cook at the time had this really big beard. They were going to shave his beard live. And so I tuned in like the beginning of it and gave like $100 and tuned back in a couple hours later, and they were like another $100 away. And so I gave the other $100 and they shaved his face on camera.
You just were like, this face is getting shaved.
Yeah.
Tonight.
I was like, that's hilarious. Let's see this.
Your wife's like, what are you doing? You're like, no. I want to see you shaved. Sorry.
It was a business expense.
Yeah. So there you go.
It all worked out.
They're a client.
Right. But John was on camera saying, hey, listen, we have enough money in my bank account to go 2 months and cover expenses. And
awesome.
We can't open and sell food.
Yeah. Honestly, think 15 years ago. Like, would a restaurant ever be like, you know, my hands are up.
Right.
Look at me. I am naked. Mm-hmm. Like, these are my faults. These are my issues.
Yeah.
Please help me.
Right.
Like, that, it's insane how that's changed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, good for them, though. That's really smart. Like, that's got me thinking now, too. Like, because engaging our guests is so key. It's so hard. I mean, you can throw out a social media post every day. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look at my brisket sandwich. Look at my chicken sandwich. Look at my burger. Look at my roast beef sandwich. You know, right. Here's one of my staff. And I mean, we do that because I feel like it's important to do that. But it's got to be more than the social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got to be, it's got to be more. Like, there's got to be, that's so brilliant. They're like, hey,
right.
We're like, you know, gamers might think we're cool. Let's kind of set up a stream and do some of this engagement. And it'll give us a little of exposure, maybe make us a little bit of money. That's really smart.
Yeah. So, you know, they still struggled a lot during those couple months, but it was something that kind of got them through. And it was, like I said, very honest and open. There were other places that were posting way too honestly on their social media, talking about, I mean, the owner would put out, it was a bakery, but they would put out, like, hey, we had two customers today, and listen, if you don't show up tomorrow and buy a cupcake, we're going to be closed in a week.
Right.
That
right.
kind of stuff. It was like, I definitely don't want to go buy a cupcake now.
Well, it's like, you can't act like a victim, right? Because you got into this.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we signed a lease. We hired these people with the idea of, listen, you work for me, it'll benefit you because you'll get paid. Hopefully you're proud of what you're putting out and the work that you're doing, and I benefit from it because you're doing it, and you know, you work with a distributor and you're like, the whole thing is like this big, like, you can't act like a victim.
Right.
You know, I can't, like, if I failed, you know, I can't go like, well, my customers never came. It's like, yeah, no shit, dude. Like, because you're not doing it well, or you're not, you don't, what's your competitive advantage? What's your game plan? What's your business plan? You did that not work? Then you got to pivot. You know, okay, this wasn't working. Well, guess what? All right, or, you know, your brisket costs double what you thought it was going to cost. All right, well, then what are you going to do? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you got to figure it out. My friend's family used to own a shoe repair in DeWitt. Mm-hmm. And old Italian people.
Okay.
And they would, anytime they would kind of finagle or like MacGyver anything, they had this thing. They go, shoemake, shoemake. And shoemake meant like, they would meant like, you know, you were like kind of, you know, making something or problem solving, but usually it meant like something with your hands, you know? They'd be like, oh no, like your pot handle broke. And they'd be like, oh, you grabbed this and shoemake. They used to, they literally would say it out loud. It was hilarious. But I was singing that the other day because I had a piece of equipment break and I was like, uh-oh, you know, what do I do?
Yeah.
I got to get through service, you know? And like, so we figured it out, my whole staff, and I have the best staff because they help out and they're all like, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And we're like, yeah. No, that's not going to work. All right. And I was like, oh, shoemake. You got to shoemake. Like, you got to figure out how you're going to get through it, you know?
Yeah.
But the victimization thing, like, I have an 8-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's hard to teach those kids is like, don't always be a victim.
Right.
You know, it's like sometimes you just got to say, I got to get this done. So what you're saying, I think, is totally true. Like, there is a bit of transparency that's like, hey, listen, this is what I need. But I mean, if you're calling out your guests and being like, if you don't come.
Right.
I agree. Like, my first thought is like, I don't want to go.
Right. Now, I will say, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's tough, though.
And that place I've never been to. And I drive past it all the time. Mm. There, I will say, with that, you know, this is 4 or 5 years ago. We used to do the meetup.com website, which, you know, it's like groups to get together for anything and everything around the world. So you could have like a photographers group in Syracuse that meets once a month or whatever. So I went on that and started a dinner club. And like an Eat Local New York dinner club. And the thought was once a month we would get a bunch of people together and we would go to a different restaurant, just a random one that on an off night, everybody would pay their own bill. And it'd be great. Like, I was hoping, hey, maybe we'll get 100 people to show up to a restaurant and turn their week around.
That's amazing.
We got up to about 30 people. Well, in a normal setting, we got up to about 30 people. And it was the group consisted of women, mostly divorced or widowed.
They're just
60 and older.
It became a dating restaurant like group. But hey, yeah. Whatever it takes.
Right. So it was like me and all of these really old women who were, you know, just trying to get out of the house. And it was pretty funny. And, you know, they're all like sitting there listening to every story that I have to say.
You were a popular guy. You were the most popular guy.
Right. But we would have between, you know, 18 on a low end to 30 on a high end come out to, and we did it once a month and it was great. I could call up a restaurant. Hey, I'm going to be there with 30 people next week. Awesome. There were two events that we did where we had like 80 to 100 people show up to. And the first one was at the Cider Mill. It was right after, or I had just read an article that they had a general manager who had stolen like $60,000 or some crazy amount of money from them over the course of a couple years. And I read the article that morning and I was like, oh, we should do the dinner there. So we did it, but I put it on Facebook and said, dinner to support the Cider Mill this night, make your own reservation, come in throughout the night, eat on your own. You know, our group had like a big private table in the back room, but everybody just show up this night, support the Cider Mill, packed the place out within like a day. They were completely booked.
Wow.
I mean, I think there was like 80, 85, somewhere around there. It was awesome.
If you're a local restaurant owner trying to get customers in your door, then you need to join the Eat Local New York card. It's free for local restaurants to participate, and all it does is it gives customers a $5 discount when they spend $25 or more and show their Eat Local New York card. You can head to eatlocalnewyork.com today, scroll down to the bottom to our business-to-business page, and sign up for free there. You can also contact us by email at anthony@eatlocalnewyork.com. So head over there and join the Eat Local New York card today. And now, back to the episode.
I was like, hey, maybe next month we'll have like 50 people show up, but just a regular one. No, we went back to 20. So the month after that, I was like, all right, I'm going to test this theory out. So we went to the in-between. They didn't really need any help. I mean, every restaurant needs help, but they didn't need any help.
Yeah, they do.
I put on Facebook and made an event, dinner to support the in-between restaurant on this night at this time. Packed the place out. Just by saying dinner to support this restaurant, people...
So that's the common denominator, like the support part.
Right. I mean, people just turned up like crazy.
You know, people in Syracuse, I feel like there is a... I don't know, this like kind of loyalty, this pride.
Yeah. Right.
This pride. I mean, I went to grad school at Cornell in Ithaca.
Okay.
And people would come in, and I was like the local, right? Mm-hmm. So like they're all from like, you know, Taiwan and Korea and India and New York City, and you know, they're all from all over the darn world. And I was like the local guy who they were like, you know, local. But Dinosaur Barbecue. Mm-hmm. They all wanted to go to Dinosaur Barbecue because everyone in Ithaca would be like, oh, you're from South Korea?
Yeah.
You need to go to Dinosaur Barbecue. Because they were like proud of this kind of, and I mean, Ithaca is like an hour away.
Right.
People would be so proud to, you know, let me present to you the golden gem of Central New York, the dinosaur.
Yeah.
And we'd go there. I remember like, you know, I would go with like groups of 20 people, like half of them spoke broken English, and they would be like, this is crazy. And I mean, of course, dinosaur is great, you know. I feel like we have a few of those joints in town where people are so proud, you know. And I think Syracuse, I'm the same way. I'm from here.
Right.
I'm proud. Like someone comes in from town, I'm like, let's go to Possibilities because it's really fun and really good.
Yeah.
You know, or like there's certain spots where you're like, this is really, you know, we got to go. Let's go get wings at Shifty's. Let's go do this. Yeah. There's certain parts where like, and I mean, those restaurants are probably just like, I don't know. We're just, you know, trying our best to do what we do. And, you know, but yet you get this local kind of pride. And I think people from New York, Syracuse specifically, I feel like they have this pride because, you know, what else have we got up here?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, people will be like in, you know, Florida on vacation, and someone will be like, oh, we're from Syracuse. Oh, yeah, Dinosaur Barbecue. You know, like, it's like, this is what we're proud of.
Yeah. We did the thing at the Palace Theater back
I saw that. That's awesome.
December.
Well, you got to tell me more about this, like, the tip thing at some point too, where like you guys have the group that goes to the restaurants.
Oh yeah, I forgot
about
that.
But sorry, go
that.
Ahead. Yeah. But like that just reminded me, like that's awesome.
I interviewed John Stage on that series, and his episode comes out, what's today, Tuesday? His episode comes out Thursday. So I was in here recording the intro for that episode, and just thinking about, it's wild. Like, I've seen dinosaur barbecue sauce on Parks and Rec episode.
Yeah.
You know? It's strange to think that that restaurant started here in Syracuse. And I met Gary Vaynerchuk, who, I didn't meet Gary Vaynerchuk, but Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, entrepreneur, big celebrity personality. His videographer, who's also a celebrity in his own right, D-Rock, will put on his Instagram, which has hundreds of thousands of followers, a post every couple months. It's a networking post. It just like literally says, this post is for you. Leave comments on what your business is and what you need to hire, and or leave your comments on what you do as a freelancer and connect with people. And so I posted in there, because we just launched our new website and I need bloggers all over the state now.
Yeah, nice.
So I posted, we need bloggers in New York City. And this woman comments, hey, I'd love to do it. I've been in food my whole life. I actually manage the dinosaur barbecue down here in Brooklyn. And I was like, I live in Syracuse.
Yeah. You know? You're like, hey, perfect fit.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm from your Holy Land.
That's right.
And she didn't really care.
We're the origin like, story.
Yeah. She was like, oh, cool.
Yeah. She didn't care.
Yeah. But yeah, it is amazing to think that we have places like Dinosaur, like Funkin' Waffles, Possibilities, Kitty Hoynes. I mean, places that are, you know, known all over the country. Yeah, it's wild.
Well, yeah, I think there is a value. Like again, those guys are doing it right. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, dude, Possibilities is so packed.
Yeah,
all the time.
Right.
I'm like,
yeah.
Wow. Like, that is, like, they are doing it right. And you still go in there, and I'm like, the food's still good.
Yeah.
It's not like the food's crap. I mean, no. It's still good.
Yeah, it's still really, really good.
And the drinks are still really good.
Yeah.
You know? And the service mm-hmm. is still... The service, to me, is the biggest thing, too.
Because mm-hmm.
that's where... I feel like that's where it starts to fall off. I mean, the food can fall off very easily. A chef leaves, a chef goes... A new chef, you know, the food, you know, it is what it is. But
yeah.
I feel like it's so easy right now to just hire people and throw them to the wolves. And mm-hmm. be like, we're not going to train you, just go. And then you get like really poor service or people who are just completely apathetic to
yeah.
the whole thing and just want to make money, which is tough.
So I've got a question for you about that with your restaurant. But first, I need to give the listeners context. And I only know this because I got to produce the podcast you did with Gerhars. But you come from you worked and were in upper management at Burn Dairy for a while. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how many years were you there?
I was there for 4 years.
Okay.
I think 4.5 years.
And
I don't know why I said it like that. Like, yeah. That's a weird sign. That came across
yeah.
very odd.
It was 4 years. Yeah.
4 years? Sorry. Go ahead. We can cut that out in post.
Don't cut that out. all right. So what's the training program like if you hire... what was your job at Burn Dairy?
I was a regional, like a district regional director.
So if a manager of a store got hired or whatever, cashier even, or whatever the
yeah.
position was, I'd imagine there was some sort of a training program.
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, there was a good training program there. You know, I mean, the turnover was tough because it, you know, people, you know, it's basically back then was a minimum wage job. I believe mm-hmm. that they have raised their
yeah.
wages since then. But, you know, when I first started before the pandemic craziness happened, like, you know, it's a minimum wage type job. So like people would be in, they'd be out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we had a HR department that created the training program. I helped create certain training programs for the food part.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty intense,
yeah.
you know? And we, you know, we had layers of basically, monitoring whether it was happening. So for example, I would monitor the manager
okay.
who would then monitor the assistant manager who would then monitor the new hire
okay.
to make sure. So then I could say, hey, where's their training packet? Hmm. Like I'd walk into a store. I'd be like, where's the training packet?
Hmm.
And I'd look at it. I'd go, why isn't this crossed off yet? I'd be like, oh, we haven't gotten to, you know, refunds yet or
yeah.
something like that, you know, and be like, okay, well, let's do it right now. Let's go there.
Hmm.
So I think the layers of kind of, again, accountability helped with making sure that the training happened.
Yeah.
Because I think in a lot of restaurants, there's not that layers. There's your owner. Mm-hmm. There's maybe a manager.
Right.
And then there's just the new hire. Yeah. Who the owner is usually the one who hires.
Yeah.
Typically, depending on how big. Like, I'm sure Dinosaur's got, you know, layers right. and training and stuff like that. But, yeah. you know, if you look at, like you know, Panchitos, you mm-hmm. know, are they, do they have layers of, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they do. They have multiple units, right? So maybe they do.
Yeah, they have two. Yeah.
But anyway, my point is that, like, I think at Burn, yes, it was a corporate situation.
Right.
And that's when, and sorry, I don't mean to, because you're about to make a point, but I feel like that's when a corporate situation is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people look at corporate restaurants or corporate settings and they're like, oh, this creates a bad climate. This is not good. You can't have a corporate culture when it's, you know, corporate culture is like, you know,
right.
oxymoron. But I don't think that's true. I think you can do
yeah.
it. It's difficult, but I think overall it can happen. And I think there are some benefits to it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to have an HR person help me
yeah.
with certain things, 'cause things would get done more, you know, I think it makes sense. I love, you know, and again, restaurant owners are often like, we have to be better at kind of delegating
mm-hmm.
instead of being like, everything is, I have to do everything. It has, you know, you have to trust your staff because you can't, you don't have time to do everything.
Yeah.
Like, I have a family. Like, I
right.
can't literally every single night get there at 6 a.m. and leave at 9 p.m. Like,
yeah.
I need someone who I give a key to and say, hey, I'm going to trust you
mm-hmm.
to close up, make sure all the equipment's off, make sure, you know, the smoker's on, like all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think in a corporate setting, there are benefits. But sorry. So
yeah.
yeah, Burn Dairy, we definitely did have that. You were about to make a point.
That's my point. My point is, I think the one thing that local small restaurants could benefit from would be some sort of a training program manual that their staff goes through. Because I can't think of one restaurant, like local independent restaurant that I know of in Syracuse that does that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a waiter, if you're a server, you may shadow for a couple sure. days, maybe.
Who are you shadowing with, by the way?
Yeah. Right. Just somebody
whoever's on.
Right.
You know, it's yeah. tough sometimes. It's like, oh, who's working today? Jared. All right, you're working with Jared.
Yeah.
He's really good with the customers, but he's really bad on the POS system. But we'll figure that out later. I mean, like, that's how it goes, right?
Right.
Poor Jared, by the way. But it's, yeah, no, it's true. It needs to happen. But then again, it's so hard to find time.
I know.
Because guess what? I'm trying to find a better brisket price.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Which is taking, like, when I'm not, like, literally working my cash register
mm-hmm.
and I have a second, oh, wait, but then I have to go pay all my invoices, you know? And then, like, oh, I got to go do this. Or, you know, the bathroom toilet is leaking again. I mean, like, literally there's a gazillion things. But it's not all doom and gloom.
Mm-hmm.
It is fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to sit here because people are going to be like, what are you doing? You know, you're, like, sitting and complaining. Like, it's not. It's because when, like, I mean, actually, a question I think would be great for a lot of restaurant owners.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you do it? Like, that would be a great just like, I'm going to let you talk. Why do you do it?
Right.
Sit back and hear the crazy bullshit. But it's like, honestly, like, there are times in a restaurant where you can look around and whether you're a manager, but however you operate, whether mm-hmm. you're an owner or whatever, and you look around at the theater of mm-hmm. it all. Like, if you come into my restaurant at 12:30 and we got, like, you know, 20 tickets up
mm-hmm.
for all different types of orders and sandwiches and stuff like that. And you see, like, you know, someone is cutting, like, the toast and the other guy without even knowing is giving them a box to put it in with, you know, from behind them. And, you know, you hear the callbacks like, hey, I got two fries. I got four briskets, two fries, four briskets, heard, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And, like, you sit there and sometimes you just can sit back and you see just this movement. And it's like when you see, like, a good basketball team run a motion offense,
mm-hmm.
and, like, guys are moving without the ball. Like,
yeah.
I can, you know, it's like the moving without the ball. I don't know how else to say it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these guys over here are doing something. These guys are literally putting the food together, but what they're doing is just as important as these guys
mm-hmm.
over here. And I'm like a little restaurant, you know, when you're saying, when I used to work in full service restaurants, and I used to be a wine director in New York, and I remember there would be nights where it'd be like 10 o'clock at night, and finally it was like our last seating, and I would look around at the tables, and I'd see all the bottles from my wine list on the tables. And like, if, like, you know, 80% of the tables had a bottle of wine on their table, and I would sit there, and I'd look, and people would be drinking, and all the glasses were filled and all the waters were filled and everyone was kind of just at a point where like the service staff was like able to kind of get their stuff together and figure stuff out. And I would just stand there and it was like such like a content, like, all right, this is good. This is what hospitality is. Like everyone feels comfortable. Everyone feels welcome. It's all like, and it was just like this amazing thing. And that's the goal. That's what you look for. And although that doesn't happen all the time, you know what I mean? Like more often than not, someone's coming back and they're going, I ordered honey mustard and you gave me spicy mustard. And you're like, ah, damn. All right. Sorry. Let me remake that for you. Or, you know, let me give you some, you know, let me fix it for you. But there is time. So like, I mean, I would be so curious, you know, if asking restaurant owners, like, why do you do it? You know, I mean, cause to be honest, like, it's not like you're, we're not making, I mean, some people are, but we're not becoming millionaires opening a sandwich shop in DeWitt, you know? So there's got to be another reason why it happens. And it happens all the time. Right now, somewhere, someone is opening up a crazy restaurant idea somewhere. They're paying too much rent. They're, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And yet they're throwing their life savings right now somewhere around here. I guarantee it.
Oh,
why?
Oh.
Because they got this drive. It's crazy, right?
Well, the question.
I'm sure you see some crazy stuff, by the way.
Yeah, I do. There's, you know, it's something that I know it exists at like small area chambers and things like that. But, and I think Liverpool has one. Mark Cardone, who's a friend, teaches some sort of a training class in like basic business or whatever it is. But and I think that's part of the chamber. And it's available for like new, if a new business is going to go into Liverpool, they have access. It's free. I forget how long it is,
that's
but
awesome.
They can go through it and learn the basics of some different things. I wish, I mean, it's, I've told the story 1,000 times, but it's why I started Eat Local New York, because I met a restaurant owner who she was coming up on, I think she was a year in business, but at the time she was a branch manager at a local bank, had a great job, great benefits, retirement, made a great living, had a nice house, loved to cook, and she made the best X. Doesn't matter what it was. Everybody makes something.
Yeah.
Right.
I've heard it before. Yeah. So go on. I'm on the edge of my seat now. What's the way?
Love to cook. Friends told her, family told her, you're the best, you know, ever. You should do, you know, you should do this for a living. If you could just find a way to sell this, you'd be a millionaire. Da 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 da. You should open your own restaurant. And over time, you know, family functions, parties, she's making this and everybody's loving it and she's enjoying it. So one day she decides, I'm gonna go for my dream. I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to open up my own restaurant. And she did make a great X, but that's all she knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know how to pick a location, choose a name, get a logo, design a menu, do the marketing, figure out her food cost, know how much food to buy and when to buy it and how to store it. None of that. How to get custom. So she wound up opening up a restaurant in a really terrible part of town, especially for that style of restaurant. Had no idea how to do anything except for make that one thing and maybe some other items, but really that one. And by the end of the year, she was depressed,
overworked,
anxiety. Yeah,
broke,
I mean,
maybe, yeah.
Broke, you know, I mean, just the whole thing. And she was, and by the time I met with her, and I was giving her advice, I was like, if you could just run this like $500 Facebook ad, you'd probably get a bunch. And she was like, oh, I just spent my last $2,000 or however much money it was on an ad for Clipper magazine. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, when is it going out? Like, hope you might get some people from it. Oh, it went out last month.
Have you
got anybody? No. And sure enough, like a month or two later, she was out of business and, you know, it was terrible. And that's why I started, because I wanted Eat Local New York to one day be able to post on Instagram, go check out this restaurant and get the sandwich and then see 40 people show up from it, you know? And I figured if I could influence people to do that and send them to the places that needed the help the most, maybe I could make a difference. But there's so many people that I meet where it's like, okay, maybe it's a good idea, but everything else sucks. Or maybe all this is good, but your food and your menu suck.
When you are in an industry with such thin margins,
yeah,
you have to be so on top of your shit.
Yeah.
Like so on top of it. And having a good business background and acumen, you know, is great.
Right.
But just there's got to be something there. And the problem is in the restaurant industry, you get a lot of people like her, which, by the way, it doesn't always work out poorly. But like, you know, I mean, statistically,
yes,
even if you know what you're doing, it's not going to end up well.
Right.
It's so, so hard. Mm-hmm. But yet, why in my industry is it full of, like, it's why? That's the why. I want to know the why. I want to ask restaurant owners why.
I don't,
Because that's, it's like, why are you taking this massive risk? I mean, I know I took a massive risk too, but like.
Well, why did you do it?
Because I love it. And honestly, I don't know anything else as well as this.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go to the NBA.
Right.
I'm not going to make it as a professional basketball player. So it's like.
Yeah.
Well, no. And also, my wife is amazingly smart and talented, too. But like my why is because I crave being able to. I've always done it for other people. I've always worked and successfully helped other people operate.
Right.
And I've opened restaurants, and I've worked in restaurants. I've worked in the kitchen, and I've been a chef, and I've worked in the front of the house, and I've been a GM and a wine director, and all these crazy things. I've worked in New York City, and I've worked with, staffs of like hundreds of people in corporate food service, and I've worked in little tiny restaurants, and I've done it all. And I'm like, I need to figure out whether I can do it for myself.
Yeah.
My restaurant was supposed to be actually a full service restaurant.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
Peachtree Social, man. It was going to be awesome, dude. My cocktail list is so awesome.
Really?
I've spent years on making the best cocktail list, menu, because my original business plan, full menu, cocktail list, like just really cool full service restaurant, in my opinion. Southern inspired, just like my restaurant is right now. And always looking for spaces. I actually came really close to a space in Fayetteville.
Huh.
Like to the point where my lawyers were like, here's the lease, sign it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to sign it. And then it fell through after that, which it often does. But but it was a full, it was a big space. This was like 6 months before March 2021. Wow. Like, I mean, like it was half a year before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have been completely screwed.
Hmm.
So I'm glad it fell through, but I mean, I there's so many spaces. There were a couple spaces, a space in Manlius that I came really close to signing. Just a lot of spaces. I came so close, and with this full service business plan, which was still, someday maybe. But after the pandemic, I was like, maybe I need to look for smaller spaces because takeout, it's got to be takeout. I feel like takeout, and I feel like I just, with dumb luck, you know, stumbled upon like, oh,
yeah,
this industry is headed towards delivery takeout and less towards sit down. I mean, there will always be a room for sit down restaurants, but I'm like, if you're a new up and comer, like this is the kind of way to go, I think.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I have this great lunch menu for my restaurant. And I'm like, what if I just take the lunch menu, kind of tinker with it, put it in a smaller space. It's all, you know, it's all the same stuff, all scratch made stuff, but like, you know, it's takeout. And I was actually supposed to have more seats than I have. Like, I don't know if you noticed in my restaurant, I have like two little tables in the front, which are always filled. But there were supposed to be more tables, and I had actually built the space smaller to fit with zoning and things like that. But the the idea was to have a bigger restaurant, and I'm so glad now, because now it's like, you know, if when I open up a second one, like I have the model that's like working. So that's going to be able, you know, that's going to help. Instead of being like, oh, I have this big bear of, you know, rent is crazy because I have this huge space and I have not only a back of the house staff, but a service staff. And I have to have all this stuff. Like, you know, now it's just like, oh, I can do it. I can do it in 1300 square feet.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a easier thing to find, I think.
Yeah. Do you offer delivery?
Yeah.
Oh, you
well,
do.
Well, we do. So,
like Grubhub and stuff.
Yeah. So, so we do DoorDash. Well, so let me explain a little bit further, because I was reluctant in the beginning.
Yeah.
To do the DoorDash or the Grubhub, I was like either one or both or whatever, because it's expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard it's come down a lot, though, right?
It's come down a little.
Okay.
But like, I know that some people. In the middle of the pandemic, I mean, it's kind of sucks too, right? I mean,
yeah.
not that the CEO of DoorDash is listening to this podcast, right. but like it kind of sucks. Be, like, yeah, I mean, you kind of raise your commissions while people are in certain need of you because, you know, but it's business, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You can't blame them for trying to make money, but you can just, you know, not use them. But regardless, yeah. The one thing that kind of got me onto them was that there is basically a deal where it's like if they basically put a link on my website.
Yeah.
And if you go through that link specifically, then the commission, I don't pay the commissions.
Yeah.
Which is great. So I try and, without being, again, too aggressive or obtrusive, if someone says, do you do delivery? I say, we do. Mm-hmm. Go on my website. There's a little button on the top. It says order for delivery. Click on that. It'll get you to DoorDash. And they'll be like, oh, so I can just order with DoorDash. And I try and say, like, listen, I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, you can order with DoorDash, and if that's easier for you, that's fine. But you can also go to the link, and then that takes you to DoorDash. So it's not like you're having to re-put in your credit card or which, like, I think, like, why do people use DoorDash?
Convenience.
Because I think typically, like, you don't have to, like, you know, keep putting in your – it's like, it's all right there. I can just be like, this is me.
Yeah.
Click on a restaurant. I want this, this, and this. Order for delivery. You know, double click the side of your iPhone and it's like boom, and then you get right. it. So you can still do that, but in that situation, I don't pay. So we do delivery through DoorDash. So if you go on the DoorDash app right now, is it?
Yeah.
You could still order from my restaurant right now, and I would pay that commission. Or you could go to my website, click on, and so I'm trying to kind of use some like you know directional marketing.
Yeah.
To kind of be like, go to the website, like right. you know, pictures of the website, pictures of the button to be like, hey. Go here, you know, but I would never tell someone, like, don't, you know, it's like, listen, you do what you got to do to get what you want.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ever tell, like, a customer or guest, like, you know, don't you dare go to DoorDash, only use this, because, you know, then people are turned off by that.
Yeah. I mean, my wife is, you know, somewhat of a frugal person and definitely far more than I am. But
she doesn't pay $100 for people to get their shaved, for cooks to shave their beards.
No, she doesn't.
Three lives.
No.
Okay.
So. No. You know, I'm definitely a convenience person. So, you know, we never really realized how much of a difference there was between how we spent money until we were on our honeymoon. And,
that's a
great time to find out.
And, she's like, oh no.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding.
So we were in Hawaii, of all places, where it's, you know, far expensive. And
nice.
I want to, like, if valet is offered, I'm going to valet my car. You know, we went to a beach at one of the resorts, and you had to rent the chairs for the on the beach. And so I'm like, okay, well, we're going to rent the chairs. They were like $10.
What
like,
else do you do?
Yeah. She was like, no, we don't need them. We'll just put the towel. We'll sit on the – I'm like, no. We're not doing that. We're going to we're going to rent the chairs. She won most of those. I know eventually she'll listen to this. Honey, you won most of those. Just keep that in mind.
Well, it sounds like you were smart about it, right? Because that's, I mean,
no, I was not smart. I was not smart about it. Oh, okay. I argued.
You were still new.
Yeah, I still argued a lot, and then I just gave in. But having said that, my wife is she prefers Grubhub or DoorDash. Like some Friday nights, we'll order pizza.
Sure.
A lot of times we'll order from Pies Guys in Eastwood.
Nice. I haven't been there yet, by the way, but I love the idea of it.
It's okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're going for Syracuse-style pizza, so the strips.
Wait, I thought it was like Chicago-style.
That's pump pizza.
Oh.
Pump pizza is the Chicago deep dish.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with Pie Guys.
Pies Guys is just the strip. It's
Syracuse. Pies Guys?
Pies Guys.
Okay.
They've got locations. They've got a few locations.
Oh,
but,
nice. Is there one on James Street?
Yes.
Like, okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. They've got, I think they have like quite a few. I don't think it's, I think it's like different family members.
But why do you order through Pies Guys?
Well, they're close to us.
Okay.
The other pizzeria that's down the street from us.
Oh, and you're tying this into something frugal, by the way.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
The pizzeria that's like really close to us, in the beginning was really great, and then they screwed up a couple times. So, so now we order from Pies Guys. They're on Grubhub, so my wife will order from Grubhub. If I'm home and I order dinner that night, I will just call and pay with a credit card. But my wife doesn't want to talk to somebody on the phone, and she doesn't want to have to get
They don't have online.
They don't have it on their website, no. They just have either Grubhub or you call them.
So you call them. That means you are sitting there. Yeah.
Right.
With your credit card in front of you.
Yeah.
And then you turn it over and they're like, what's the security code?
Right.
And it's worn down. And you're like, I think it's like 8 something. Like, yeah. So that I can see that can be a.
Yeah. And on a Friday night, you're probably going to be put on hold because they're busy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think the online ordering is so key right now.
Yes. So,
but you're still ordering from Pies Guys.
Yeah, we're still ordering, but through and she knows this. She, you know, but Grubhub, it's like, okay, well, we know Pies Guys is paying a 30% commission, but she'll still do it because the convenience, and she doesn't want to talk to somebody and all that kind of stuff. So, a month ago, maybe she texts me. It's Friday night. Hey, we're doing Pies Guys. Yep. Okay. So. She texts me back like 5 minutes later. Hey, it was going to be $75 on Grubhub or $40 if I called. So I just called. So the prices.
Yeah.
So my point is, I'm noticing a lot more restaurants in our area nowadays have realized, oh, well, I'll just overcome the 30% by raising the price up 30% on the app.
Sure.
Which
you could do that.
You should. I mean, you could.
Yeah. A savvy person would kind of see through it, right?
Right.
And go, I know what you're doing here. All right, I'm going to call you now.
Yeah, and she did.
But an unsavvy person might be like, that's really expensive.
Yeah.
Honey, look how expensive these pizzas are. They're $40 a pizza on Grubhub. That must be what they normally are. Well, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, damn, I feel like that's risky, but I mean,
I've noticed
forcing people into calling you, which is where you're paying less. But then why do the Grubhub anyway? I mean, if you're going to those extremes,
right?
Then maybe it's like figure out some online ordering or you know, make online ordering, but also do the delivery yourself.
Yeah.
If you're a pizza company, by the way, like, don't all pizza shops have like delivery guys?
Yeah, they do.
I guess the exposure of Grubhub though helps. So, listen, Grubhub and DoorDash, they're not like the devil. I mean, I see what they're doing. And the fact like that they have this thing where like, if you go to my website and order, I don't pay the commission. Like then that leaves it up to me to direct my guests to that.
Yes.
And they're like, hey, if they go through my website, what do you want me to do? I get it.
Right.
It's interesting though, too, because there's a human aspect in all of that as well. It's not just the technology.
Yeah.
There's actual people picking up your food who are getting paid to bring your food somewhere who are not your employees, by the way, which is bizarre. It's such a bizarre relationship, like the dynamic of the DoorDash guy walks in.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm here for Jenny R. And they show it to you. You're like, oh, Jenny R. Okay. Yep. Here you go, sir. Mm-hmm. And then they take my bag.
Right.
Like, they could write something.
Yeah.
They could write a swear word on the bag.
They could eat the food.
They could actually mess with the bag. They could go and get in a fight with their girlfriend for an hour on the phone and then deliver it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of stuff that can happen. Not to say that they do that, by the way, because honestly, like, our DoorDash drivers are, like, to be honest, the guys who, for some reason, are in our area and the gals, like, are awesome. Like, I gotta admit, they're almost 95% of them are like guys that we actually like look forward to them coming in. We're like, yay, what's up?
Yeah.
We actually like, you know, it's like we give them a little fudge. We're like, chill out. Yeah. Like, because sometimes they have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come super early.
Hmm.
You know, they would be like, in order, it's for like 11:50. They'll show up 11:30. They're like, I'm here for Jenny R. And we're like, dude, that's like a burger. It takes 10 minutes to cook. Like, we're really sorry. And they're like, okay. And they'll like kind of wait. And I'm like, oh, man, here. Have some fudge, chill out, like, you know, because in the end, like, these guys are like, if they don't like us, there is, and this, I'm not assuming that they're going to do something terrible, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I'm putting my life, livelihood in their hands to a certain extent. Be like, you need to bring this somewhere,
right?
Deliver it for me. I don't know you. You have nothing for, like, I don't pay you money. I don't, you know, you got to like make sure that these guys like understand, like, you're not a jerk. You're someone that they might want to, like, maybe go above me on. I had this one DoorDash guy. I swear to God, it was crazy. We had two. It was, I forgot the name, but the name was, like, John R. They don't give you the last name, just the last letter, right? We had two John R's. DoorDash comes in. I'm here for John R. Here you go, sir. Thanks. Have a great day. Another DoorDasher. I'm here for John R. Wait, what? No, you already came. Oh, wait. No, here's one. Oh, no. Tell me you're the one that needs the chicken sandwich. No, I need four burgers. And we're like, Oh no.
Yeah.
That went out. And the guy's like, I'm going to find out where he went. Because if I can catch him before then. I mean, obviously, if the food gets delivered, we're not going to give it. But, like, the guy was literally, like, a block away, figured it out, was able to have the guy come back.
Oh, wow.
Like, so it was like 2 minutes where he was gone. He didn't actually make it there. He and they switched it back, and, like, that dasher could have been, like, remake it, I'll, you know, or whatever. But they, like, they helped out with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we try to make them, like, comfortable when they come in. Which is, like, again, not to sound like a loser, but like hospitality, like in my restaurant, when we talk about hospitality, it's not just for the guests. It's hospitality for our delivery drivers. It's hospitality for our vendors. It's hospitality for the random guy who comes off the street and goes, do you have a bathroom I can use?
Yeah.
It's like, we do have a bathroom. And even though you're not buying food, I don't care, man. Like, go, like, yeah, man, yeah. Like, let's take care of you. Whoever it is, like making people feel comfortable and making them feel welcome. Because every single one of those people have a mouth and a brain. And every single, like our Cisco driver comes in, like, people forget, like, that dude's got a family. He goes home on Friday night, and he's got to figure out what to eat.
Yeah.
He has friends who are like, hey, you know, where should we go? Like, these are, like, real people. Who it's like you treat the Cisco driver like shit.
Yeah.
You think he's going to tell people, like, oh, that Petri Sandwich Company's good? Or you think he's going to be like, they're a bunch of jerks? Like,
yeah.
It's everyone. It doesn't matter who it is. That's what we preach.
I've been saying that for when it comes to especially the Grubhub, Uber drivers, that, you know, restaurants should treat them like customers. I thought it would be cool to have, for a restaurant to have, like, a, you know, a table set up or whatever for the drivers where you have, like, maybe cans of soda or bottles of water or chips or sanitizer or something. And you're doing that with giving them fudge when they stop in and just treat them like the customer. Imagine how much better they're going to handle your food, how much faster they're going to deliver it.
Totally.
Yeah.
I had a DoorDash guy, our favorite guy, Kevin, and he came in one day and I was like, hey man, here have some fudge. It's going to be a couple minutes. And he's like, dude, I just told someone about your fudge. Cause we, for the listeners to know, we give a piece of fudge with every sandwich. And, you know, a lot of places give pickles and we give fudge because what's better than fudge? And he's like, I was telling people about your fudge and then they came in just for the fudge, but then they got the burger and they thought it was so amazing and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, boom, that guy just, you know, basically made me money somehow.
Right.
When I went to Exo Taco a couple months ago, and I love Exo Taco. It's like so much fun there. Like, the vibe in there is so much fun. Like, I love... I'm 44 years old. I go in there and I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. But anyway, which makes me not cool. They do so much delivery, like door, like, you know, that they have like this whole section that used to be like a seating section, like a revenue generating seats, you know, seating section.
Right.
That now has a big metro rack with just bags and an actual employee who their only job is to stand there and manage DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats people coming in and out and making sure that those things get out. And I was like, oh my God, like it was, like you said, like they have room.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like bottle of water or something like that. Hmm. That's really smart actually. Yeah. You know, that's a great idea to be like, hey man, you know, so sorry that you got to wait maybe a couple minutes, you know, but like, because then they're going to be like, yeah. And they don't need to, like, they don't need to be like, I'm going to pick this up.
Right.
There are times where people, you know, and I haven't had this problem, I think, because I'm in the middle of DeWitt and there's probably a lot of people. Like, I bet, like, certain restaurants who are in kind of like different areas, you know,
for sure.
You can't find a dasher.
Yeah.
You know,
I never thought about that issue. And then one night I went out to Nedro. I went to Tanner Valley Golf Course.
Okay.
And my friend Joel, who's listening to this, who's a client and him and his fiance own 317 at Montgomery Street.
Oh, nice.
And
isn't that still there, though? Or is
Yeah, it's still there. So, Joel, I had just been talking with him like a couple days before. I was like, hey, we should hang out sometime. So he texts me, hey, I'm down at Tanner Valley. You should come out. And
do you live near there?
No, I don't. I don't live anywhere near there. And, so he was like, you know, I'm hanging out here at the bar. Come out and have a drink with me. I was like, all right. So it was kind of like a late Friday. It was like not late. It was late for me. It was like 9:30 on a Friday night. And I get an Uber out there, no problem. I realize once I get out there where the hell I'm going, that it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Good luck getting an Uber back.
And that was the problem. And I get out there and I realize it's Natalie's, his fiance's high school reunion.
Oh, God. All right. So you're just like.
So I'm hanging out there with him, you know, and he wasn't in that class. So
you just wanted like a buddy.
So we're hanging out there. And then it took me an hour, like within 30 minutes of arriving there, I started calling for an Uber. It took an hour and a half to get an Uber. And finally somebody showed up. But. I mean, it was just, it's insane. So I couldn't imagine a restaurant being out there in the outs, you know, having to rely on that.
Well, at Burn Dairy, we started using DoorDash, Burn Dairy uses it. And I mean, Burn Dairies are in very, like Middle Fulton and Camden, like these interesting areas where it's like you would wait.
Yeah.
You know? Like it'd be like you'd hit order ready for pickup on like the little tablet in one of those stores and it would say, you know, finding Dasher.
Wow.
And it would go ring, ring, ring. And it would just be like, you know, and then like the pizza that you made was like, it's cold after 10 minutes. And then you're like, okay, let's remake the pizza to find a Dasher. So, I mean, there are pitfalls for sure. But we haven't seen anything problems in the middle of DeWitt for sure.
Yeah, that's good.
Dude, I have so many things to ask you, but I don't want to like make this crazy though.
No, go for it.
But earlier you were talking about Kasai and in the Danny's Steaks. Like, so is it Kyle? Is that the name? Yeah, Kyle. So he has two restaurants right next to each other.
Yeah.
They don't share the same kitchen.
No.
So he has two kitchens with two insanely opposite cuisines.
Yes.
Like, it's not like Danny Steaks guys are like going over to Kasai and be like, hey, I need some of that shaved ribeye.
No.
Like, there's no.
No. No crossover.
And it's just him running back and forth. Like, so every day. Like, I'm sure he's got a good guy. That he trusts.
I have to go down there right after this episode. If you want, I'll go show you the kitchens because you'd probably like them.
Oh, my gosh. I've never.
Yeah.
Two things I haven't done, which I need to do. Kasai.
Yeah.
And Cider Mill. I'm going to just say it publicly.
Yeah.
I haven't been yet. And I'm like, I got to get to both.
Yeah. No, it's pretty cool. The kitchen at Danny's is unlike anything else in Syracuse because it's so huge. It used to be Provisions and which was a bakery. And so the kitchen back there has a really big prep area. It has a really big area for like where Kyle is. It's just a really massive kitchen. So like you walk through the double doors into the kitchen space, the back wall is three offices. So that's now where him and his chef and his GM have their offices. And then, I mean, literally you walk out the door of the office and you're in the kitchen and it has this big dish area, it has a big prep area. He's sectioned off this one area for his line. I mean, it's a huge, huge space for what it is. And then you can just walk through one door. You're in the bathroom area. There's like the men's and women's room. And then it's a little corridor. You open up that door, you're at the bar of Kasai. Or you can go downstairs into the basement, and you're in the basement of Kasai, where they have their main dining room, and then their kitchen and walk-ins are down there, the walk-in freezer and cooler down there. It's this really cool, massive space. And I couldn't imagine. It's weird to be there and hang out because I've spent, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, Kyle did, who Kasai gave us the beers tonight for free, so thank you, Kasai Ramen.
Nice. Thank you.
Kasai, I was hanging out there a couple weeks ago, and he was doing this private dinner for, actually, Isaac from Middle Ages.
Okay.
It was his birthday, so it was Isaac and his wife and two of their friends, and they had this private, like, 5 or 6-course tasting menu that Kyle and Jesse just made up.
Awesome.
And I was hanging out there taking pictures just during the whole dinner, standing on the other side of the line and goofing off with them. And
sounds awesome.
So, and he had like Wagyu beef and whole prawn and all this crazy menu. And it's wrapping up. And I was like, I think I'm going to get a beer here. I'm going to run next door to Danny's and get a cheesesteak before I head home. And Kyle was like, oh, actually, I'm going to make you and Kyle dinner from this menu as soon as we're done. It's like, great.
Wow.
So the three of us wound up hanging out at Kasai until like almost 1 a.m, eating and drinking nice. And talking shop. There is this, but there is this weird thing. It's not weird. It, between Kasai and Danny's, it's like, I don't know. It's what I imagine a restaurant in a big city was like in the 90s. It's just this, like, no one else is doing what they're doing. I mean, there's other Philly cheesesteaks, but there's no other, and there are other people doing ramen, but there's no other ramen shop, but there's no other restaurant tour in his age range that's doing what he's doing right now, and which is like hand-making a lot of food from scratch, doing it kind of in a different, you know, ramen shop, first ever ramen shop in Syracuse, but just, I don't know, just different, but it's like all these weird people, oh, they're going to hate this because these are like the core demographic of our listeners. And I know Kyle and Jesse are listening to this when this comes out. But it's like this weird group of people who are really passionate about food, mm-hmm. have a desire to figure it out and make something good and not just kind of put out frozen this and frozen yeah. that. And they're all just like, I don't know, they're just like kind of dirty, not Jesse and Kyle. They're gonna hate that I said. But no. you go, you know.
Oh
what
no,
I, mean?
I know.
They're
like, I know.
They are.
But it's you're proud to be dirty. You're proud right. that your hands literally every night. Yes. Never you can never wash the garlic right. off of your hands.
Yeah,
like your hands. You're like yeah. garlic. 24 hours a day, you are yeah. always just sweaty. You're always dirty. You're always kind of
right.
You know, it's your feet always hurt.
Yeah.
You know, your back is always kind of painful, but yet you still stay out until 1 a.m, 2 a.m,
yes.
but you always make it to your next shift. I mean, that's the yeah. type of person that, like you said, in like a big city.
Yeah.
Those are the type of people you get.
If I worked in the industry, I was in Syracuse, I can't think unless I was trained and I was at like St. Urban or something like that. But even the food that Kyle's putting out is great. If I was a waiter, bartender, server, I couldn't think of a restaurant that would be more of a opportunity to be at right now in central New York than what Kyle's doing.
Well, it's I you know, all that stuff, like that the whole dynamic that you're yeah. describing is always comes from the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always comes from it always comes top down. So
right.
somehow
yeah.
he is creating this culture.
Yes.
That is allowing someone from the outside like you
yeah.
being able to identify it.
Right.
Which, by the way, is amazing. Because if people from the outside can identify what you're trying to do, and I don't know if that's what he's trying to do, but it sounds yeah. like it, then
well,
then good for him.
It sounds like it's like a hippie commune version of restaurants, of restaurant owners. Mm. Like they're all always.
Oh, speaking of hippies, though, you didn't he also is gonna open something in the Blue Tusk space, right?
Yeah.
Is that him?
That's yeah, it. I was just there just before we came
you
here.
Know, so okay,
yeah.
So
I mean, yeah,
I would love to know his why. That yes. would be pretty interesting yeah. because does he have a family?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they just had their second child.
He has a young child.
They've got two young children.
And he's yeah. got two restaurants. About to open a third.
Actually, about to open four.
Oh.
So he's okay. so they have he has Kasai. He has Danny's.
Yeah.
They're opening the Tap House on Walton, which is going to be like, I don't want to say an upscale version of the Tusk, but it's going to be a much nicer version of Tusk.
Cool.
And then right next to it is going to be the Tap House Bread Company, which is going to be a scratch sourdough bakery.
Mm.
That's not just going to be a bakery, but then supply bread for all of his restaurants.
So he's going to have to find like,
yeah,
see, he's going to have to staffing, man. I bet.
Yeah, for sure.
I bet that's what's making him pull his hair out.
Like, I mean, that's definitely, he doesn't have any issues now. I mean, they just had a few slots, positions open up and, I mean, they had, you know, dozens of people apply.
Awesome. It's the culture.
Yeah. So that hasn't been an issue, but it really is just like, I don't know. It's just this, it's like, you know, I don't know. I can't think of a way. I love it. I absolutely love the people that work there. I don't know all of them very well, but like even just being, hanging out around it, it's like an orphanage of people that were never in the industry, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like these are five-star chefs that were kicked out or something like that, mm-hmm. but they all have a passion for food, and it just every time I go there, no matter what time of day it is, they're there.
Yeah.
They're, everyone's there.
But you know, it's funny too, because you don't have to be, well, certainly a lot of people go into that situation and they're not chefs. They're not, right. You know.
Yeah.
But you need people to have a drive and ambition to want to become something like that.
Yeah.
And you gotta have the culture, and you gotta have the structure,
mm-hmm.
you know, the infrastructure to have those people know that, hey, I'm not just gonna be the guy who's chopping shallots in the back
yeah.
all day long and peeling garlic and you know and basically taking herbs off of like it's like you need someone to know that at some point you're gonna learn how to make the noodles.
Yeah.
I assume do they make the noodles yeah. there? Yeah. So.
Is that like one of four machines in the world that does, it's like crazy. Yeah. yeah.
So like, if I know I'm working there, at some point I'm going to learn how to make ramen noodles the right way.
Yeah.
That's a skill. That's right. going to be a good skill to have. You got like, you have to offer people more now.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, I'm going to pay you.
Right.
Come and do this.
Yeah.
There has to be some sort of like, you come to my restaurant and when you walk in, you see how everyone is super nice and there's hospitality. Like, you're going to learn how to do that. And you're going to learn how to make focaccia bread. And you're going to learn how to roast turkey to exactly the point. You're going to learn how to make roast beef. You're going to learn how to grind meat. You're going to learn all these things because you're not going to be here forever.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever you go, hopefully, you can take this. But mostly, the idea is I hope that you take learning how to treat other people, learning how to work with other people. Like, that's, like, the key. But, like,
yeah.
there's got to be, like, a back and forth. It can't just be, like, I'm paying you.
Oh, yeah.
So you go do this. Because, and I have a feeling back, like, in the day, like, that probably is the way it used to be.
Yeah.
But, like, it can't be that way anymore.
I love.
You got to offer something.
Lauren Markowitz, we had her on as a guest recently. She's part of the crew down in Amano. And
dude, I love yeah. Amano.
Amano is my favorite.
Is it? It's yeah, yeah. so good. My wife and I have been there twice, and I swear to God, both times we had the best service,
yeah.
the best meal. We try and go back, but it's always packed.
It's always busy.
Yeah.
I went there once years ago, and I didn't have a reservation. We just went in for dinner, and Alex, who's you know one of the owners and part of the family and the chef. So Alex and Lauren are boyfriend and girlfriend, been together for years. But Alex saw me, recognized me as I was leaving the restaurant, walked up to me, shook my hand and said, if you ever come back into my fucking restaurant again without making a reservation, we're going to have a problem. not that it's like that high class of a restaurant that
no.
you have to have a reservation. It's just, you know, I'm sure he wanted to know
that you were here.
Yeah. And
but
so
dude, they get busy though.
Oh yeah.
They do a great job. Honestly, but like it's so for people who want to open up a restaurant, mm-hmm. like you need to simplify. Like there was a time in like the 90s, right? It's like you'd had a menu this long.
Yeah.
You know, for the listeners, I'm making a big space with my hands. It was a huge menu and you had to do all these different things. And it's like now I feel like what people want is simplicity,
yeah.
but make it good.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like you're going to make me pasta. I want that pasta to be made in house.
Yeah.
And I want it to be good. And if you can use seasonal vegetables, you know, that's what I kind of expect if I'm paying a certain amount of money and I want,
mm-hmm.
and guess what? The server doesn't need to be the most knowledgeable wine, you know, sommelier, but yet the server also needs to be kind
yeah.
and help me navigate through your menu and make me feel comfortable.
Right.
Simplicity. Like that's all it is. Now, in the restaurant, like it's not simple to make ramen noodles. It's not simple to make tortellini in mass. You yeah. know what I mean? But in terms of like having your staff know what they're doing and having the customer know what to expect, I think like the simplicity right now, that's what I want. I want simplicity and I want expertise.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Amano, I love their pasta. They make really good pasta. Like I expect that.
Right.
And I'm happy to pay for it. You know what I mean? And their service staff are really good too.
Yeah. Battery die?
he's like, he talks too much.
No, but Lauren, you know, they come from Philly. They come from high-end restaurants at Philly,
yeah.
in Philly. And, you know, I asked Lauren, like, what's one of the biggest differences? And the thing that she said was, in Philly, there's five people waiting to take your job. You know, they were working at Mark Vetri's restaurants.
Nice.
They've got four or five people waiting to take their position on the line because it's competitive nature. Around here, you're begging people to come to work.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in some of the higher end places. I couldn't imagine having it. But no, it is wild. I mean, seeing, you know, that night at Kasai, Kyle had this idea for chimichurri ramen. Like the noodles were made, you know, with chimichurri. I got there like, I think 30 or 40 minutes before service, and I watched him have this great idea and try and figure out how to execute it and get it to work and like go through like four or five versions of like, okay, how am I going to pull this all together? But it was on the menu, so it was going out one way or the other. And he pulled it together, you know, figured it out at the last second. And 5 minutes later, they were sitting down and ready for that course.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really, I wish I could figure out a way to document everything that's happening in that space right now with that staff and have it come out the same way as if you're sitting there hanging out there, because it really is something special. Like so many Italian-American restaurants in Syracuse, they all stem from Grimaldi's.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm sure one day there's going to be 20 restaurants that exist where either the owners or the chefs stem from Kyle's restaurants.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, it's I don't know. If I see one more chicken riggy, I swear to God, I'm like, I can't. And that's why Amano's good though, because like, it's not your red saucy joint. And there is a market for red saucy joints.
For sure.
You know, yeah. God bless them. And they're making money and they're packed every night. Right now.
Yeah.
There is a red saucy joint that is just
turning out,
yeah. You know, dried pasta with red sauce, sort of Utica green and chicken riggies. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, the idea of business is to make money. That's
right.
Fine. But I love the idea of us kind of pivoting towards something that's a little different than that.
Yeah.
And to bring it full circle, how people around here are really, you know, proud. There's like a pride in like some things. People root for the Kasai's people. And I mean, imagine having a customer base, regardless of what industry you're in, where people are rooting for you. Like no one roots for, I don't know, whatever company, Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one's rooting for Pfizer, you know, like these massive companies, like, but like people might root for Kasai, even like if he has like a little down cycle or something like that. I remember when I opened up, you know, and you open up a restaurant, like you make mistakes, like shit happens. Like we had, you know, we still make mistakes. It happens.
Yeah.
You try your best not to. But I remember people would come in and I'd be like, oh my God, we forgot like all four of your orders of fries. Like, I'm so sorry. You literally live in Jamesville and you drove all the way back here to pick up fries. Please, your whole meal is being refunded. Like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and they would go, no, you need this money. We need you here. Like, I swear to God, they would be like, no. Let me give you a tip. And I'd be like, we screwed up. I am not accepting a tip. You know, they'd be like, no. And we don't accept tips at the restaurant, actually, because I'm like, we're a takeout restaurant. Don't give us tips. Just come back. Spend your money again. But like, they'll be like, no, they root for you. Where do you get that? Like, honestly, like they want you to do well. It's like the most amazing entitlement that you can have.
Yeah.
And in a good way.
Right.
Like, I feel entitled. People are coming in my restaurant and they want me to do well so they can tell their friends, have you been to Peachtree? You got to go there. They want to be able to say that with pride and with confidence. It's crazy. And I'm sure like the whole Kasai thing is the same way.
Yeah, that's one thing Central New York really takes a lot of pride in, and that's its restaurants, because that's, you know, our thing. It's our thing around here.
Culture is cuisine.
Yeah.
Culture is cuisine. I mean, and we don't have like a specific Syracuse cuisine.
No.
But I'll tell you that it is so intertwined. What, you know, I mean, I have a Southern restaurant in Syracuse, New York. You know what I mean? Like, but the fact that people know where I'm from and I'm from here and that I am working my ass off to make really good food and really good hospitality, and people are like, boom, that's Syracuse culture. Like, hardworking, good food, you know, doing it the right way, you know, having a happy staff. Like, people love that stuff.
Yeah.
It's important. I think it's important. It's important anywhere you go, whether you're across the world or whether you're in Philadelphia or New York City or whatever. That stuff, it makes a difference. It's important. Food. That's part of my why. It's because food. Food is so important.
Yeah, it's... it really is. It's you can learn a lot from a place by the restaurants that they focus on and that you hear the most about. So, well, tell people where they can find you if they don't know already.
Thank you. Shameless plug here, Peachtree Sandwich Company. There is a Peachtree, www.peachtreesandwichco.com. We're in the middle of DeWitt, East Genesee Street. We're right in the same plaza as the UPS store, Dosa Grill, right across from Tops, right across from the Firehouse in DeWitt. We do. You can order online on our website for delivery or for pickup, or you can call us. You can always ask for me if you have any questions about our menu. I love talking. If you couldn't tell already, if you're still around, listener, if you can't tell, I love talking about food. And so I'm always willing to have a great chat about what you what people like and what they don't like, and how we can you know, further our relationship of me serving you food that can make you happy and make your family happy. That's kind of the deal.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there it is, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Whatever platform you're listening to this on, make sure that you subscribe to the platform, to the podcast. That way you'll be updated the moment a new episode is released. And don't forget to leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the podcast. You can also, you know, if it's easier, one thing you could do, every Monday morning we're releasing our new episodes. They're just right at eatlocalnewyork.com. You can go there, click on the episode, and there you can either watch it on our YouTube channel right there from our website, or you can listen to it on whatever platform that you prefer. And just a really easy way to find not only our podcast, but all of our content, our blogs, and our new video series. And it's really cool. You should go check it out. It's a new website that we just launched. You can also pick up your Eat Local New York card there, or you can find the list of 160 plus participating restaurants that we have on the card, and you can also get your tickets to the Sangria Crawl. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We're going to catch you next week right here on the Eat Local New York podcast.